So it's John 10, starting at verse 1, on page 896. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. He who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays his life down for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees a wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, he has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Others said, these are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? Well, as you've probably noticed in the news, today we celebrate the Queen's 70th Jubilee, our first monarch with a platinum jubilee. And it seems to be, even if you're a Republican, it seems to be that most people would consider her to be a good monarch, a good queen, right up there among the best. And so it's ironic that the rest of the news is all about self-serving leadership. And it happens at all levels. So if you follow the local news, often you will find it in the local council. And then it works on a bigger scale. So we've had lots in the news over recent months about how contracts have been awarded, those ignoring the rules that they made up themselves and setting a bad example. On an international level, we're looking at bad self-serving leadership. And no doubt you experience it at work, at school, or other institutions and clubs that you're a part of. Also, what's been in the news in the last year or more, sadly, if you read the church news and sometimes in the national news, is bad leadership in the church. There's been a shocking and extensive abuse of leadership. We've seen it in the Church of England. And before we go, oh, well, that's the Church of England, it's actually the ones who are most like us in the Church of England recently who've been accused of that. We've seen it in the Free Church of Scotland, our sister church. Oh, we've seen it in the Acts 29 network, the sort of outward-looking evangelistic ones, distressingly in the Ravi Zachariah organisation, in the FIC, and actually we've even dealing with some fallout in our own presbytery from this sort of thing. These are from people who are gifted, have done good, but then seem only concerned about themselves and or the brand that they promote. Not for the sheep and not for God's people. Now, we thought about this quite a lot in the evenings when we've looked at 1 and 2 Kings. But here, Jesus is dealing with just that issue. And so we're kind of scared of it, but Jesus takes it on the chin and just deals with it head on. So what are we looking for? Well, first half of John 10 is the answer of what is the right and the wrong kind of leadership. But really, what is the right kind of leadership just flows out of who is Jesus. So you can't actually separate those two issues. Jesus says here, I am the good shepherd. And notice what he's not saying. He's not saying, I am the good boss. I'm the good headmaster. I'm the good prime minister. I'm the good elder. All of those things, sometimes with a degree of difficulty, albeit, you can get rid of all of those people. Or you can remove yourself from them. It might not be straightforward, but it's possible. But Jesus is not employed or elected. The term shepherd in the ancient Near East is the term often used for a king. And you see that frequently in the Old Testament, that the kings are the shepherds of the people, with God as the ultimate shepherd. Jesus is saying, I am the ultimate king. And we thought about this before. In the New Testament, sometimes the word for Jesus' kingship is where we get the word despot from. He is the ultimate leader. But also he is good. Being under the shepherd means that you're under his care as well as his authority. Now, a lot of people object to Jesus' authority because we have to, it's such a high claim of authority we have to submit to. And normally we want to get away from despots and ultimate authority where there's no accountability that's comes back the other way. And yet to be under this shepherd, under the good shepherd, is good. It is good to be under him. Not only is it good to be under him, the reverse is true, that it is bad to be free from him. Normally we want to free ourselves from these kind of leaders, but to be free from Jesus is bad for you. So under the ultimate authority of Jesus leads to life and freedom. If you are free from Jesus, you actually are heading towards death, slavery, and tyranny. So the reason why people want to reject Jesus, all the reasons they find for rejecting him, actually they find in their rejection, the tyranny and death and oppression. All the things that they will miss, all the things you worry about being oppressed, are lost when you come to Jesus. And so what happens in chapter 10, verses 1 to 21, is Jesus gives a short parable in verses 1 to 6, and then he unfolds its meaning in three blocks. So he says, I am the door. By that he means I'm the only way. We look at his life. And then he says, I am the good shepherd, as opposed to the hired hands. We think about his death. And then he says, I'm the good shepherd again, who knows you. And we think about his resurrection. So let's have a look at this simple parable. I'll read it again to you. Chapter 10, verses 1 to 6. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. So the context here is chapter 9. In fact, that's how the section ends, about the blind man. So Jesus has healed a blind man, and he, as a response to that, everyone else calls him bad. The religious authorities say he's evil. And it raises this question, what is legitimate religious authority? What is good and bad use of authority? Verse 1, he says, if you don't enter by the door, you're a thief. It's about how to enter. And verses 1 and 2, he contrasts the good and bad. And verses 2 to 4 about how the good and the true shepherd relates to his flock. And that's what he's going to unpack in a moment. And he leads them. That's a big idea. You may have heard this before, and I've heard it from someone who went on holiday to the Middle East. And the tour guide was saying, shepherds lead their sheep in the Middle East, in the ancient Near East and today. Shepherds would walk out. You know, if you've ever been anywhere of Granddad used to do this, used to round up his sheep using sheepdogs. In the ancient Near East, the shepherd would walk out, he would speak, the sheep hear his voice, and they follow him. And as the tour guide was saying this, they saw someone with a big stick driving the sheep. And they went, well, what's that then? And he said, that's the butcher. The shepherd walks out in front, and the sheep follow his voice. So the good leadership is by example and not by fiat. Christ's leadership takes that to another level. And you know this, don't you, in any other walk of life. If you're the one in authority over you sets an example by doing something and then says, come and do what I'm doing. And he leads, Jesus leads, by going to the cross and dying. Jesus does not ask a single thing of you that he has not done. So notice too in verse 3, the sheep hear his voice and they follow. They don't hear, weigh up, consider what he's saying and become his sheep. Rather, they are his. He knew them by name before he calls them. They may not be aware of that at first, but then they hear his voice and they follow. And there's echoes here from Ezekiel. And in Ezekiel, he talks about the leaders of Israel leading up and just beyond the time of the exile as false shepherds. They use their position and their authority in a self-serving way. They take what they can from the sheep. And so through Ezekiel, God promises to judge them. But not just to judge them, but to send an alternative. He'll send a good shepherd. Now what's interesting about Ezekiel is that sometimes he describes this shepherd as David, as a descendant of King David. And other times this shepherd is God himself. And of course now we see in Jesus how those things are resolved, as he's both. So Jesus is picking up on these ideas and he applies them to the Pharisees of his day, especially thinking of chapter 9, that Jesus cares for the blind man, but the religious authorities don't. And it's true today that churches, for some people, are a business. It's to promote the brand, or even closer to home, for leaders sometimes to get a sense of self-worth or to get a reputation. Contrast Jesus. Jesus protects and leads the sheep by example. And the New Testament expands this theme. So, for example, 1 Peter 3, we looked at a moment ago, Jesus is the shepherd who then appoints under-shepherds. These are imperfect men, but they follow the good shepherd and follow his pattern, which is a pattern of sacrifice and death. And of course, we're about to see that now in Jesus, in his life, death and resurrection. So the first thing he says then is, I am the door. Some versions, if you're using an NIV, it's the gate. The same idea, verses 7 to 10. He says, I am the door. So I am the only way, he says. And this is about his life. Now in the ancient Near East, what they do is they have these pens built with an opening. Just big enough to get a sheep through. And the shepherd would stand or sit or even sleep in the doorway. So no sheep would get out and no thief would come in. You'd have to wake up the shepherd. I think I've preached on this passage once before and used the story of, when we used to do youth groups, we'd have we did overnight ones, we'd have a boys' accommodation and a girls' accommodation and a leader sleeping in the hallway so that they would stay that way. Jesus is saying, I am the only way in. You can only come in to the pen through me. And notice again, Jesus says, and we've heard this already in John, hear a lot in this chapter, I am. There's a way in the original language, you know, it translates into English as I am, but it just says I. But this is emphatic, I am, which is God's name, to be, I am. In the Old Testament, we read it in Lord's, the word Lord in capitals, is saying, I am. So he's saying, the only way to God is God. The only way to God the Father is God the Son. You only enter the fold, the pen, the people of God eternally if you come through him. There's no other way in, and actually there's no way out because he keeps you in the fold. He protects you there. Others do come in the illustration, other ways in and not the door. So they identify there, that they are there to harm the sheep. They haven't come in the right way. Contrast what Jesus will do for them. If you look at verse 10, a well-known verse, the thief comes in only to steal, kill, and destroy. I come that they may have life and have it abundantly. You may have memorized it as I have come life, give them life and life to the full. Now that sounds like chapter 9 that we looked at, doesn't it? He's doing good to the people, and a wonderful picture of what Jesus' aim is, to restore people and give them life, abundant life that's found in him and not elsewhere. The false shepherd's aim is to benefit from the sheep. Now, false shepherds may grow the church in numbers and finances. They may grow their reputation with it. But they're willing to do so at any cost to the sheep. You know, you break some eggs when you make omelets. Jesus and his true under shepherds want the sheep and the flock together to flourish. So it shows what Jesus wants to you, but you must enter by him and him alone. And true shepherds have to be true sheep. And we see more of why that's so in a moment. And we see why coming through the door, you know, the thing that people want, what people want in not coming to Jesus is freedom. And that he's going to threaten our life somewhere. It's not going to be what we want. But actually, when we come through the door, the only way, you find life abundantly, not restrictively. Then he says, I am the good shepherd. He says, I am the good shepherd who lays down my life in verses 11 to 13. He's good because what makes him good is because he lays down his life. Now, he's talked about his life. Now he talks about his death. This is the opposite, he says, to the hired help who works for gain. Again, he says, I am. And we thought about that Ezekiel issue, that the shepherd is David and the shepherd is God. He's both, because Jesus is both. He's descended of David and he's God come in the flesh. And yet, identifying himself as God and the good shepherd who dies, mysteriously we have to get our head round, or maybe not get our head round, this mystery that God has come to earth in the flesh in order to die. And the echoes here of Psalm 23, we'll sing a bit later, Psalm 100, we often sing as well, that God is the shepherd king. He is the good king. And that means he cares and he protects and he feeds his flock, his people. Now look at the contrast between verse 11 and verse 12, between Jesus, the good shepherd, and the hired help. Jesus comes to die for his flock. The hired hand runs at the first sign of danger. So we have a contrast of death versus self-preservation. And we see that contrast in the gospel. Jesus speaks the truth wherever that leads and whatever cost. The Pharisees don't even speak their mind because they fear others. Jesus is very different, and so the under-shepherd should be copying him to protect the flock from the wolves. Now, what that means as the New Testament unfolds that usually is to do with false teaching, but also to stand up to things that are unpopular or related moral issues. Occasionally within the church, it might mean to stand up to destructive people to protect the integrity and the health of the flock. To protect will come at some personal cost. But the fake shepherd takes a run. They don't stand up to false teaching. They don't speak about morality. They will not say boo to a destructive person. They are nice and they are popular. And lots of people like them. But they don't want to rock the boat for their own sake. And the long-term health of the flock will suffer. And so we need to be under the shepherd protecting you and the flock, not one caring for themselves. The caring for themselves or the sheep is always the question. And notice the shepherd imagery here. Now, I've mentioned this before because both the Glad's grandparents were farmers and one of them kept sheep. I was at school with a couple of lads I was at school with became shepherds. Now, the first thing you notice about a shepherd is they're not soft. They don't have nice clean hands and they're normally quite big. They normally play in the second row in rugby and so on. Often in church artwork, if I used this once as an illustration at our last church, and someone pointed out there was a stained glass window before me of Jesus cuddling a sheep, that's a bad picture. or certainly an inadequate one. Shepherds stand between the sheep and the wolf with a club. That's what shepherds do. I mean, not in Sussex or in Scotland, but in the Middle East. They would stand between a wolf with a weapon. In this country, they take the sheep and they dip them because it's good for them. The sheep bleat and moan about it and object to it. So beware of the shepherd who only works on cuddle mode. There's a time for that, but it's not the only mode. And Jesus didn't work in one mode. He worked across all those things that you might expect a shepherd to do, from comfort to grabbing hold of the sheep to driving away wolves. But all of what he did drives to his identity and then drives on to the one who goes to the cross. So when we look for an under-shepherd, it's one who protects and dies, not one that runs scared. Because more importantly, we're pointing here to Jesus Christ, the good shepherd who died to bear our sin as his own. It wasn't his own, he never sinned, but he takes our sin as if it was his own in order to give us life. That's part of why he is the way. We come empty-handed. We only have our sin to offer. He takes that and dies for his sheep. And then he goes on and says, I am the good shepherd, again, who knows the sheep, in verses 14 to 18. So in verse 14 he says, I am the good shepherd, I know my own, and my own know me. So he's talked about his life and his death. Now he talks about his resurrection. And he starts by talking about mutual knowing. He knows his sheep know him. And notice again, he says, I am. In case we've missed it, Jesus is I am. He is God. He is the covenant Lord we've learnt about in the Old Testament. Just as God called himself the shepherd in the Old Testament. And look at the level of knowing that Jesus talks about. He says in verse 15, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. So he's talking about the eternal relationship between Father, Son, and Spirit. He will know us, and we will know him as the Father and the Son knew each other in eternity. Now that's quite mind-blowing, isn't it? I'm going to know the Son, and I'm going to know the Father as they knew each other through all eternity. And that's what he died for. See, negatively, we've already thought about his death. He died to take God the Father's just wrath, and we sang about that earlier on, that God's just wrath is poured not on us, but on him, and so that we don't take it with us to hell. We're now free. That's the negative side of the cross, but the positive side, he says here, is he laid down his life so that we can know God, Father, Son, and Spirit. And that's Christ's mission. And therefore his body's mission, the flock, the church's mission, will be, verse 16, I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. So Jesus' ministry is mostly to the Jews. And the Old Testament is all their history is about this promise that a king will arise and save them. But not them alone, but the whole world, and will lead the world. So Jesus, beyond this ministry, there are others he talks about, which is us, Gentiles, people who are not Jewish, people from all over the world. But his aim is to create one flock, to create one church. Jews and Gentiles united, and actually, as you come to the Bible, it's not just Jews and Gentiles, but any kind of way we normally divide up the human race. All becomes one under him. And that's envisaged right at the beginning of the Bible, and we see it wonderfully at the end. So Jesus' mission is to save his sheep, to call and to gather them, and he's still doing that today. And he does so through us. So that's part of the church's mission. Part of it is to do as we're doing right now. We gather to worship and to be fed by the good shepherd. And the other part is bringing in the sheep that are not in the pen yet. Now notice, whenever these ideas are talked about to do with reaching the lost, they're along the lines that Jesus talks about here. That in this case, the shepherd goes out to find the sheep. What do sheep do? They sit and bleat because they're lost. They don't have maps and compasses. So the church's mission is to go to the lost sheep, not they come to us, to a church service or whatever. Now, they sometimes do, and that's wonderful when that happens. But imagine a shepherd. The image here is he goes out into the open countryside. He's aware that there's some sheep lost out there somewhere. What does he do? Well, he doesn't go back to the pen and make it nice and cozy and tell the flock to be inviting and welcoming when they come in to attract the sheep. Now, that's not a bad thing to do, and that's something that we might do. But what he does is he goes out into the countryside to find them. And notice that the good shepherd knows them, and they know him. And he speaks, and when it's him that speaks, they hear, and they know, and they follow. Sheep not of his flock, they don't. But these ones do. And so the mission is to go to the sheep and speak Jesus' words, and they hear, and eventually they come. And actually this ties in with what we thought about on Thursday night. We had a church business meeting, a congregational meeting, calling missionaries. And what is their job? Ultimately, there are all kinds of things that make up their job, but it's to go to the lost sheep and help us to do that together. And this is connected to Jesus' resurrection. Verse 18, no one takes it from me. His life he lays down. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. And I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again, because he's received that charge from his Father. So Jesus' death is not tragic. Now, when you read the Gospels, it is an extremely moving account of the moments up to Jesus' death and as it happens. And it's not tragic. It's purposeful, and it's under Christ's own timing. He lay it down. It's not taken from him. And he takes it back up again. Hence, he doesn't just take our sin, as wonderful as that would be, but he gives us life. So early in verse 10, he gives us life and abundantly. Now, when he says that, it's not like these holiday adverts, and they completely work on me. I want to go on them. Rather, this is the resurrected life. This is being a new creation. We share his risen life. Now, later on in John's Gospel, we'll talk about, Jesus starts to talk about the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit unites us to Jesus in his death and resurrection. And so we are alive in him. And as Jesus puts it here, we know him and he us. And again, this is more about his identity, his authority and power. Who can choose the moment of their death? I mean, short of suicide, and even then you're not completely in control. Jesus chooses the moment of his death. And what's remarkable about that is it, from what we're seeing happen when he dies, is other people that kill him. And Jesus says, no, that's what you're seeing. I'm choosing the moment of my death. I choose when I go. And he has authority to take it back up again. Now, who can do that? Who has authority over life and death? Well, God does. I am does. Who is also in the flesh, Jesus Christ. And this is who is united to you, that you know, which means he shepherds your death and taking it up again, your life again. Who knows you, whose voice you've heard. He dies and takes his life up again and has authority to do just that to you. In fact, that's where John's going to take us next in chapter 11. We'll see how he speaks his saints back to life again. Now take stock for a second. The context of chapter 10 is this. Bad leadership over God's people. And Jesus exposes that bad leadership, but shows what good leadership is. And so it's something about the nature of the church and priorities, but its source and its example is Jesus Christ himself. He is the shepherd. He shepherds via these under-shepherds. And in doing so, we see more about who Jesus Christ is and who he is to us. That he is the door. By his life, he's the only way. He is the good shepherd who lays his life down, contrast to the bad shepherds. That he takes his life up again so that we know him and relate to him. So what are we to do? Well, let's look at the last few verses, 19 to 21. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said he has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Others said, these are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? So these are responses we get, and you've probably heard this before. C.S. Lewis gets this mad, bad, or God idea. These are the alternatives we have of who Jesus is. See, this is what Lewis said. He said, "A man who is merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman, or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to." So what we have here in John's Gospel, and what we face with today, is that some people do think Jesus is bad. They think his teaching is evil. Some people do think he's mad, that he's completely potty, like a man who thinks he's a poached egg. And some in the church, even, think he's a good example. If only we were a bit more like Jesus. Though, like C.S. Lewis said, he's not left that one open to us, really. He's not, at least not alone. Does he just set an example for us? Some of what he did we can't copy, like laying our life down and taking it up again. We need to come to the Gospels afresh and say, who is this man? Who is Jesus Christ to you? Do you know each other, you and Jesus Christ? Do you hear his call to follow? Are you responding to it? You see, the good news is he's not saying, I'm a good example, pull up your socks and follow me. That's not an option. So the two big ideas we have for us here is the nature of the church and ministry and what it means to be a sheep of the Good Shepherd. The nature of the church and ministry is no matter how much we know the right answer, and we're impressed by all kinds of things, it's different for each of us, and we gravitate to those things which impress us. And they can be worldly. And leadership in church and the nature of what we are will actually be radically different from the world. And if we've forgotten, the news reminds us of what the world's leadership is. Rather, we should be Christ-centered, self-sacrificial, and not selective about what that means. Serving, protecting, care and nurture of the sheep, and go out and find those not yet in the fold. Being a sheep of the Good Shepherd means join the flock, for one. Now, I don't mean join CPC, it's wonderful if you do, but we don't believe we're the one true church, or that denomination is the one true church. But you need to be in a flock. You need to be in a church. There are no lone sheep. The lone sheep are picked off by the wolves, Jesus says. The only lone sheep are lost sheep. And we've seen something here about the criteria for the church. We need to look to the Good Shepherd and follow him and listen to him and join by the door, because he is the only way, the way to life and true resurrection, abundant life. He is the shepherd who lays down his life and raises again so that you know him. And he is, I am, God himself, with all authority of heaven and earth to protect and guide you. All other leaders fall short in their integrity, effectiveness, and their concern for the sheep. And sometimes that is brutal, sadly, even among evangelicals. Jesus has absolute authority. The shepherd is our king, our ultimate ruler, but also our saviour, who lays down his life, takes it up again, and protects and guides. And sometimes that guidance is directive. It's against the direction we're going in. A shepherd's crook is to redirect sheep against their will at times. Now remember, in this illustration that Jesus uses, in this picture, this parable he uses, who are you? Who are we in this? We're the sheep. What's a unifying feature of sheep? They are silly. We are silly sheep who need to look to the Good Shepherd. He is the ultimate king, but he is good. He says, I am the door. I am the Good Shepherd.